Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
The following is a previously recorded program from May 8th, 2013.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Derek Evers from Impose Magazine.
This is Chris Robbins. I'm a reporter at Gothamist.
And this is Nothing Urgent. This is our show at the Heritage Radio Network. We're actually at our remote location in Monaco.
Rustic location.
Representing Roberta's Pizzeria.
I saw, you know the expression, a drowned rat? You hear a lot as a kid, you know?
Did you see
it? I saw many drowned rats today, and it was the first drowned rat, in the flesh that I've ever seen in my life. And that was a pretty edifying experience.
That's pretty graphic. I woke up this morning to the loud sound of rain pounding on my window. And I woke up and went and looked on the internet, as one does, to find out how bad the weather is instead of going outside. And yeah, there was like floods like 3 feet high flowing down my street.
There's this storm drain near the Gothamist headquarters in Dumbo. And usually on a sunny day, you walk out of work and a family of rats will be poking its head like whack-a-moles out of the storm drain. And they've been doing it with impunity for months. And, you know, finally, this storm, I think, you know, uprooted them.
But that's good, right?
Then it's good, but it was also sort of eerie. You know, the sun was shining, and you're walking down the street, and then they're like, oh, that's a rat. And then you keep walking, and you're like, oh, that's another rat.
Yeah,
keep walking, and it's like, you know, it was horrifying. I see them all the time now, but it was still
That is like a setup for a movie. I can see that going into the dawn of time.
Well, I I got in this phone booth, and then this bird hit the side of the phone booth, and then I thought that was strange, and then more birds started hitting the side of the phone booth.
And then a fat guy with a hat walked by. He was just like, that guy looks like Albert. Anyway.
It was strange.
It was strange. But yeah, so We kind of split up. I actually got caught in the rain, by the way. I stopped. I left, and then I went to go to the Impose office thinking I would, beat the rain, and I got drenched walking two blocks. But I did get my sneakers cleaned.
What do you mean, cleaned? Oh, you mean from the rain?
Yeah.
That's a euphemism. Sorry.
No, it's not a euphemism. It's pretty literal.
Is that how you normally clean your shoes?
No, but I mean, it did clean them. That wasn't a euphemism.
Did you take your laundry out, too, this morning? You're like, 3 foot floods. It's laundry day.
We're gonna run through a few things with you today.
It's a new format.
It is a new format. So we'll explain it so you only have to listen to this once, and then after we explain the format, you'll never question it again. We are going to, since Chris is an editor at Gothamist, or a reporter, I should say. Reporter and editor. Can't we just say that?
Sure, promote me.
We figured we would do, a segment of news.
Business in the front, party in the back.
Exactly.
Is today's format.
We are a mullet. And so we're joined today by Ryan Devereaux, who is an independent journalist and contributor to The Guardian and Nation.
And Village Voice as well.
And The Village Voice, yes.
Thanks for hanging out, Ryan.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So for the past 2 months or so, Ryan has been covering every day this landmark stop and frisk trial in federal court downtown. And you know, could you sort of basically, in layman's terms, sum up what the trial means for the city and for the police department?
Yeah, okay. So it's a big federal class action lawsuit, right? And what it's doing is challenging the NYPD's use of this police practice known as stop and frisk, a practice that, you know, police do in cities across the country all day, every day. It's basically alleging that the way that the police department has done this over the last decade or so since Bloomberg and NYPD Commissioner Ray Kelly came into power, they've been imposing a sort of system that has resulted in widespread systemic constitutional rights violations, people's Fourth and Fourteenth Amendment constitutional rights violations. So Fourth Amendment being, you know, your right not to be illegally searched, and Fourteenth Amendment rights basically alleging that the department's practice amounts to racial profiling. So, in the course of this trial, the plaintiffs had brought forward, there have been well over 100 witnesses at this point, a bunch of cops have come in and testified, there have been whistleblower cops who bring in secret recordings that they've made in roll call meetings, where they have supervisors allegedly telling them, you know, that they have quotas that they have to meet, that they basically have to bring in a certain amount of summonses, arrests, and searches, you know, at the end of every month.
Right.
These cops are saying that it is resulted in a situation in which they're handcuffing kids for no reason. They're throwing kids up against walls, you know, basically to make numbers. Of course, the city's pushing back on this. They're saying that, you know, we've had this massive drop in murders over the last decade, and if we don't continue to do exactly what we're doing, you know, the city's going to descend into this bloodbath of chaos, basically. Right.
That's an interesting point you bring up, though, because I never really thought about it from the context of how the police officers actually view it and how it's putting them kind of in a you know, a touchy situation. No, you know, no pun intended. but
literally and figuratively, yes.
So have you gotten any kind of, like, feedback or just any, you know, from actual, like, not the heads, but, like, you know, the actual police officers being like, this is kind of, you know, intruding on how we can do business?
Yeah, what's their testimony been like as a whole? Like, is, you know, obviously the low-level guys are going to testify very differently from the upper echelon folks, but...
Right. It's very interesting because this trial has basically had patrol officers, guys who are on the street, anti-crime guys, the plainclothes guys who jump out of cars and throw kids up against walls. So the sort of the lower rungs of the department, all the way up to former chief of the department, Chief Joseph Esposito. This guy was the highest uniformed cop in the NYPD up until a couple weeks before his testimony when he retired. So you see a wide range of sort of perspectives. And I've been fortunate enough to interview some police officers over the course of this trial, outside of the court, including, you know, one of the plaintiffs in the trial, one of these cops. And basically, you know, what they describe, what a lot of these guys describe is a ton of pressure that's coming down on them from the top, from their bosses, and then a ton of pressure coming from the community, too, that's not liking the sort of way that they're interacting with their kids and basically the way they're treating guys in the neighborhood. So these rank-and-file cops find themselves a lot of times in a situation where they don't have a lot of people that they can turn to, so they turn to themselves. They don't really speak out. There's fear of retaliation. It's basically it's a huge mess.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, the city's position and the commissioner's position has been that, you know, they point to these decreases in crime and then say stop and frisk is working. But, you know, recently it was revealed that crime had dropped and then so had the stop and frisk practice. So in light of that, you know, why do you think the city is so adamant on defending the practice when, you know, obviously it might not have the sort of correlation that they're alleging that it does?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, there are all sorts of explanations, but the senior officials in the city, people like the commissioner, people like the mayor, want to be able to take credit for, you know, a safer city, because it's going to bring in business, it's going to have people moving here, it's good to have that sort of image, and you want to say that we actually did something proactive. You know, the job that we've been doing has been effective and successful, so, you know, the kind of things that we're doing shouldn't be questioned. I mean, that's my sort of sense about it. But, you know, when you look at some of these figures that they trot out and some of these, you know, they're sort of correlation causation issues,
right,
in the arguments that they make about stop and frisk and about the drops in crime. I mean, if you look at the number of shootings over the course of the Bloomberg-Kelly administration, while murders have gone down, shootings have stayed roughly the same. People are still getting shot, you know, fairly frequently, but there have been all sorts of advances in emergency medicine. You know, back when they came into office, there were no defibrillators in ambulances. So, you know, EMTs are able to do stuff at the scenes of shootings that they weren't able to do 10 years ago. As a result, we are seeing less people dying from shootings. We aren't really seeing less shootings.
Do you think that pullback by the city, and it has been a sort of a marked pullback in the use of stop and frisk, and the department even sort of changed the way they recorded them back in March. They sent out a memo basically stating that they would have to keep better records. And, you know, as I said, the practice is dropping. How much do you think the city's sort of pivot on the issue is going to affect the judge's ruling in this case? In other words, if the city seems to be steering the ship towards the direction that the plaintiffs want, how much do you think that's going to affect the judge's decision as to whether or not the practice is unconstitutional?
Well, so the lawyers in this case have laid out a bunch of rules about what can and cannot be included in the judge's decision making at the end there. So a lot of the new sort of policy decisions that the NYPD has made since this thing has picked up steam aren't going to be considered, right? So like during a few weeks into the trial, this memo appeared out of nowhere from the police department that basically laid out some changes that they were going to be implementing in their stop and frisk strategy that almost exactly mirrored what the plaintiffs are asking for in their remedies. So it's a way for the police to be like, listen, well, you know, we don't need to go through all this. This is just totally unnecessary. The systems are in place to keep this thing in check. Let's not take this any further. But it's the plaintiffs have been pretty fortunate in that they've been able to construct a case that seems to lean in their favor pretty well in terms of holding the police department accountable for what has gone on over the last decade, not just where things are at right now.
Right. And when is the judge? So let's say the trial wraps up. How long will it take for the judge to render her decision?
As my understanding is that the remedy portion, so that's when they're going to kind of figure out, you know, what to do about this sort of thing, will only be a few days.
Okay.
And very interestingly enough, earlier this week, the judge told the city that their expert witness during the remedy phase, so the person that's supposed to be the police department's expert in talking about how to solve problems, has all sorts of problems with the sort of solution that he's putting forward. That it's not really a solution. That it's all about liability. So the city now has to scramble to find a new sort of strategy in their remedy phase, which again falls in the favor of the plaintiffs.
Right. The police commissioner has been really critical of this judge, Judge Shira Shinlin. He's called her out in multiple interviews. One with the Wall Street Journal, called her biased. I mean, why do you think he's attacking her specifically?
I mean, because if you read her decisions in prior rulings against the department, she's ripped this department on multiple occasions, citing widespread, you know, constitutional rights violations. This judge, Judge Shira Shinlin, presided over a case in the late 90s. It was filed in 1999 as Daniels versus City of New York. And that's the precursor to this trial that's unfolding right now. Basically, at the end of Daniels, she required the police department to make a number of changes to their stop and frisk policies. This suit right now is a result of allegations on the part of the Center for Constitutional Rights that the NYPD failed to live up to what she told them to do.
Right.
So this is basically round two for this judge.
Okay.
Interesting. Now, I've also, you know, when I bring it up to people, when I bring up stop and frisk, because when we come out of the Impo's office and we're walking by the Myrtle Broadway JMZ, it's literally like a progression of just like police officers there with you know, young black youths that we see on a regular basis. But a lot of people you talk to outside of that paradigm are like, well, that's where the crime's happening. So that's what. But
that's
you,
even what Commissioner Kelly says.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a big part of the department's argument.
What kind of struck me was basically how loose those laws are, and so is there. Can you provide us with a little, just our listeners, with a little bit of like what actually constitutes being legal to them stop and frisk?
Yeah,
people?
What is the legal threshold? Yeah. How do you meet the legal threshold?
Yeah, okay. So the legal threshold here in the beginning stages of a stop is reasonable suspicion, which is a lower threshold than probable cause, right? So basically, for a stop to be legit, a police officer needs to be watching a person and come to the determination that that person is about to, or is in the midst of, or has just committed a crime. It has to be one of those three things. And the officer has to have some articulable suspicion, something that he can tell somebody when they ask him, why'd you do that? Why he did it. Something beyond, you know, he's a black kid in a neighborhood that has crime. That doesn't, you know,
right,
meet the bar. So if a police officer, for example, says, you know, sees some kid appearing to case a jewelry store or something, you know, he can approach them. If the cop comes up to the kid and sees a bulge in their waistband or something like that, and he feels that it's a weapon, or he feels that he's in danger, he's allowed to pat the area where that bulge is. If the thing that he pats feels like it is a gun or a knife or some sort of a weapon, then the police officer can reach into that area and fish it out. And what we're seeing in New York City, or at least what we're hearing in terms of, you know, mountains of allegations, is that that's not happening on a regular basis. That's
right,
definitely not happening.
Well, I just know from like instances where, you know, you're driving or something like that and they have a reason to pull you over in an instance so they can search you, it's like, oh, you were swerving or something like that. So I feel like I get the same sense from a stop and frisk standpoint that they're going to try to find like gray areas that will allow them to do it even if it's not really legal the way they're doing it.
Right, yeah. I mean, the gray areas where they thrive. But the thing that's important to remember in stop and when considering stop and frisk is this trial is important, but what's really important is that in a lot of neighborhoods in the city, in places like East New York and Brownsville, you have kids who, at the age of 12, 13, 14, basically at the onset of puberty, start expecting to be stopped by the police, and that's when it starts happening to them. You have parents that are super concerned about having their kids out in the street, and it's, you know, the relationship between the police department and communities of color in this city is just rapidly deteriorating. Not that it's been that great for
right.
a long time, but it's a serious thing.
Yeah, and it goes hand in hand with just the disparity in you know, classes and earning income, too.
Plenty of other cities, as you pointed out, use the same sort of tactic. I guess New York probably most aggressively. It might be too early to tell, but does this trial have like implications on like a national stage?
I think it definitely does. I mean, you got to keep in mind that the NYPD is the biggest police department in the country. Other police departments look to this department, you know, as a sort of example of oftentimes of what to do and, you know, and what's acceptable and what you can get away with. Or, you know, other departments are like, let's not take the NYPD's path in certain directions. So how this is interpreted, however it plays out, and how it will be interpreted by other departments is going to be really, really interesting. I mean, I think that this thing will more than likely be appealed, provided the plaintiffs win, to much higher courts. It could, you know, it could eventually get to the Supreme Court, and it would be a really interesting case to watch.
Yeah, that's interesting. We're getting the signals cool. from inside the room that we got to wrap this up soon. So I will just say this. Well, first of all, thank you for coming
by. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah.
But do you have any? I mean, I guess you kind of already said that if the plaintiffs win, you see it to going to many appellate courts. But do you have a prediction on how this decision will go?
Well, I mean, I think the general feeling from people that are watching this trial closely is that the plaintiffs are going to come out on top, and the judge is probably going to rule in their favor. But you never know. I mean, you know, nothing's set in stone, so we'll see.
Ryan Devereaux, thanks for sitting in court every day and doing your job so
thanks,
well.
Guys.
Yeah, thank you. And I have a feeling this might not be the last time we talk to you about this topic.
Awesome.
So, yeah, the way we're going to segue this show is we are going to actually interview the So-So Glows coming up in a little bit. They're on the road currently, I think, in Dallas, somewhere
Exciting.
In Texas, somewhere. They just released their new album, Blowout, last week on Tuesday, hit the road. It might have been 2 weeks ago.
They were just
Tuesday.
On Letterman last week.
They were. I know. That's incredible. But until then, we're going to fill you in with some enjoyable listening pleasure from imposemagazine.com.
Please, I love listening pleasure.
We started off the show, if you were listening, that was the intro music was actually from a cassette that we put out on Impose Records, Satanic Tambourines, by a man, he goes by the name of Al Lover, and the track was Black Magic Starter Jacket. I feel like I should throw that out there, seeing as
sure
we used it as
it's
our
been
intro.
Thrown.
And I'm going to start this set off with, this is actually another good friend of ours, Lee Bannon. He released a new track, and I think I'm pronouncing this correct when I say Relomatic.
Sure. I can't see it.
But yeah, this is the song he just dropped yesterday, so I figure I'll start off this set. So yeah, you got about 15 minutes to go grab some pizza and some whatever you're drinking, and we'll be back with So-So Glows.
You were. New York City. a baby to a bosom, pound to a pusher, corner to a hooker, to the streets know they looking at my feet, got that heat, and they do too, I hope they don't rob me, that's just the mind state, when you grew up in the elevated crime rate, mom's praying, hoping that my niggas fly straight, steer past jail and dodge a court date. So I'm just chilling on this train, penning lines of the pain for the people who will greet you with a debt before regret. See, we peaceful with the lethal environment we living in. Makes it easy for a nigga to fuck up and sin again. I'm chilling, man. But the streets looking for hire. Join that life, your kicks might end up on a wire. I chill with shorty's flyer, who inquire why I'm the nigga that every chick in New York desire. The city a poem, every borough verse, every street is a line, that's where my flow was birthed. So I immerse, cause I'm cursed to speak truth. So every beat I choose gets four times two. I spew haikus at high noon about who's reppin' they city like I do. I got to, for everyone I told I got you. From Queens where the kids stay lit like blocks do.
Yo, I tell you what, I could spit that good shit to make you roll that kush thick from Boogie Down Bronx to Bushwick. You understood quick, I never push whips. I hop in a gypsy cab, my chips be acting hood rich. So tell me what I should tip. I spend my last penny fast on a glass of Henny trashed in a taxi cab. I see my city smash with a sense of admiration. A cocktail of my aspiration plus a lack of patience got me back to chasing my shadow like Peter Pan. So I gotta be the man, need at least a grand to feed the fam, pay my fucking feature, damn. Feeling rowdy till I'm outy, thoughts cloudy. My loyalty be what oil be to Saudis. Essential, question my potential and fuck it. I gotta clinch you like a mic, rip you right. And trust me, I will avenge you with my metropolitan steeds. Demolishing thieves who try to steal my light while I'm acknowledging dreams. Young bastard, raised faster by a city than an absentee father. Game master, whip me like a slave master. See the marks on my back? Freedom is darker than that. Cut me some slack when I'm thoughtful on wax. This is NY, hold my pen high. You know that men lie. Numbers don't spit at 16 to represent my mind state. My blind faith has a divine place. Eternally yours, I shine safe. I fucking love you.
Wisdom from a witch doctor whispered in my ear the ingredients to conquer. Then he shed his hair, burning benzoin resin, squirting urine at my adversary's dirty nail on my middle finger as it flare. Drag my full length on the floor till it bleed on you motherfuckers. All the G niggas lovers, Latin bitches coming on my comforter. Damn, she badder than I'm used to. I cut her with her, treat her whole like my wife, treat my wife like my bitch. Money don't change who you are, amplify the shit. Whoop a nigga naked in the club and laugh at his dick. Peel off passion, niggas can't dance with this. 40 ounces at the round table, crown full of thorns made for some barbed wire cables. Thought sharp as bar darts aiming, the target is the money and ain't nobody gaming. Nigga, revolutionary thoughts, Fred Hampton speeches in my iPod. Can't walk a straight line, though I try hard. Conflicted as Flavor Flav, gaffled in the shameless game. Nine chains on my neck, you can weigh my pain.
They gon' say, he came, he saw, and he conquered. You can't stop what you can't understand. And niggas clearly can't understand what I'm here to do.
Got shooters in Brooklyn like Mikhail Prokhorov, that's on the low though. Real niggas feel me like sonar, understood. I've been guard hood nigga, watching touch of evil, swinging the fifth of Ray and nephew. Same cloth as my uncle's, but a different texture. This shit'll melt off you. My words a dog whistle in the ears of fake niggas. I just hate niggas. My OG super told me keep it Brooklyn and fuck niggas. She got a man, she sucked me like I'm him, and I'm glad she did.
kid, make some shit up, tell him it was an accident. Ain't no glory with this rapper shit, no retribution for the blind, just see solace in your mind. Prisoner of my thoughts, my morals gonna be the death of me. Can't sell records, too much complexity.
Hello, hello, are we there? Alex?
Hi.
Hey, Alex, what's up? It's Derek from Impose.
How's it going?
It's going well. So I'm joined here with Chris Robbins from Gothamist.
Hey, man.
How's it going?
It's good. We're here at Roberta's. We're eavesdropping on people eating pizza. We're literally staring at people eating pizza.
Nice.
So where are you guys right now? You're in Texas somewhere?
Right now we're on the side of the road at an In-N-Out Burger in outside of Dallas, Texas.
I didn't know they had In-N-Out Burger.
What's your order?
Oh, In-N-Out Burger is great. It's the only great fast food restaurant.
No, no. What's your order? What do you get when you're there?
Well, I can't eat much food. I have a really weird diet. I can not eat protein, but I get just, you know, French fries and a veggie thing.
That's interesting. We actually what do they call that when you can't eat protein?
Well, it's a rare genetic disorder called homocystinuria.
We actually...
I was born with it.
Yeah, we interviewed Yoni from Y, and he has something very similar to that, I feel like. Although, I could be wrong. Well, he has Crohn's, but There was something.
Oh, Crohn's. Yeah.
Derek's horrible. A doctor. Yeah.
Basically, it's totally different. So how's the tour going anyway? I mean, this is what? You've been in it like a week and a half?
Yeah. It's going good. It's you know, a show every single night and fun. It's real fun.
Are you noticing, obviously, you guys have been getting some really great press. I mean, you played Letterman. It's kind of hard to get much bigger press than that. Are you noticing it out on tour, like at the shows?
Well, you know, just kind of try to stay focused and keep playing shows and try to stay off the internet. And, yeah, I mean, it's going well.
Are you noticing...
Have the number of women's undergarments appearing on the stage increased since the Letterman appearance?
Definitely seen some kids singing the words and having fun and getting more into it. That's really good.
Yeah, that's... That sounds pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, the show in Chicago was definitely a blast. It was crazy.
And
lots of good shows. Everyone's different in their own way.
And you're out on the road with your friends, right? I mean, you're with Titus, right?
Yeah, it's a trip.
Yeah, are you guys getting time to like hang out? I mean, because I know it's a pretty arduous schedule you got going on, but you know, are you finding time to? To still hang out?
I mean, we have time here and there to hang out. Like last night we slept at a punk house together and we were just up all night kind of playing Dylan and Woody Guthrie songs. So there's definitely a lot of time to do that. I don't think the dudes can be slowed down. Bring back the dudes for...
This is
a
lot
of testosterone. It's almost too much dudes. Almost too much hanging out.
You do need... you probably need some... Whatever the opposite of testosterone, what's the word I'm looking for?
Estrogen.
Estrogen, yeah.
Estrogen.
You need it. Dr. Derek is in the house. So when do you return? After Dallas, where do you go?
I'm sorry? Oh, after Dallas, we go to Austin and then Houston, Texas.
What are you guys listening to in the van?
In the van, we've been mostly listening to comedy. A lot of George Carlin, Louis C.K. What were we listening to today? What the Fuck podcast with Mark Maron. Mostly comedians, you know. Our biggest influences as a group are... our favorite groups are, like, you know, the Three Stooges, the Ninja Turtles, the Marx Brothers, you know. That's where we draw our inspiration.
Those are great influences. I find, actually, like, when we toured down to South by Southwest and back, I find that the comedy is very... Like, it keeps you focused a little bit more than listening to music sometimes. Like, it gives you something to kind of, like, pay attention to almost. And makes the time fly faster.
Oh, yeah. I was listening to this Woody Guthrie interview today, which was really, really interesting. I'd never heard it. I think it's his only, like, long audio interview that he did. It was in 1940. That was really fun.
Yeah. What did he talk about?
We just get inspiration, you know? It's... Being in the road, being in the highway, you got to look for inspiration wherever you can find it to keep going straight ahead. Music is good, but sometimes, you know, sometimes you just need to hear comedians or Woody Guthrie just really tell it how it is.
So
it's hard to find some sincere stuff.
I know you said you're not paying attention to too much news on the internet, keeping off the internet, but did you hear about the singer from As I Lay Dying getting arrested for a murder-for-hire plot?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Isn't that nuts? Do you have any thoughts on it? Have you ever wanted to, as a singer in a band?
I can't comment on murder from that at this time.
But as a singer in a band, have you ever wanted to put a hit out on anyone?
Well, probably. But, you know, you can't act on those thoughts. Those are just, they're just some thoughts that go through your head and... You got to just tune them out and stay positive, you know?
I know.
Don't murder.
Can you,
don't murder.
That's, if there's one thing the So-So Glows stand for. No, it's so weird to think about, to go to that, and it's totally off the topic, but like to be so driven that you'd actually follow through with it. You know?
Actually, I think that shows laziness. Like if you want to murder someone, then you do it. You don't just like flip through a Brookstone catalog looking for someone to murder someone for you. You know what I mean? That seems a little dilettante-ish.
Yeah, you know, he's used to getting, you know, what he wants.
All right.
He's probably got green M&Ms in the green room.
Who did he want to kill?
His ex.
Interesting.
It's always an ex, right? Yeah. Anyway, we don't want to take up too much of your time here. So
let's
wrap up a little bit about your record. So the record just came out. Was it last Tuesday or two Tuesdays ago?
I guess it was two Tuesdays ago.
Okay. And the new record's Blowout. It's getting an amazing amount of press. I want to congratulate you guys. I think the record is really good. And
thanks.
And I'm excited to you guys come back. You're playing a show in New York when you get back, right?
There's no New York or New Jersey show scheduled on the Bring Up Back the Dudes tour, fortunately, right now. But we will be playing a show soon.
Yes, I did. New York. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I did realize. So why'd you do that, though? Why would you let your fans down if you didn't want to do it with a Jersey or New York
show? Yeah, you've gotten all Hollywood now.
Sometimes you got to let your fans down, you know? Like, they expect so much of you, and they like you, and then you just got to let them down just to know that, you know, to remind them that you're human and that you are not, you're not that good.
You have to
remind. So, you know, you got to disappoint.
You got to remind them.
Not always good to impress and have fun. We like to disappoint every once in a while, you know, just as a reminder that we're not great. We're so-so.
You got to remind them who's on stage.
Yeah.
Well,
and to remember that we're not great.
Well, I mean, Alex, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you guys, you probably are pretty close to, if not, don't you guys got to do sound check pretty soon?
Well, actually, tonight, unfortunately, the show was canceled because Patrick is sick.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So Titus and Doc is pulled out. So we do have a day off right now, which is the first day off of the entire tour thus far.
So then I guess I'll leave you asking this. What are you going to do on your day off, your first day off?
We're going to try to relax. I mean, I don't know how it's going to be, but we're probably going to go to a hotel, the first hotel. I don't know. We've been crashing on a lot of floors and getting not too much sleep. So this might be a good chance to just relax. Or we're going to, what was the other thing we're going to do? Tons of drugs and go to a brothel. What was the other? Well, maybe drive to Mexico tonight.
If you need someone to kill someone else, yeah. I'm available tonight.
And, we're going to take some people out. Zach was talking about trying crack.
Isn't that why you brought Adam, though, along, is like to fill in when you need him and then also to give you back rubs?
Partially. there's layers. There's layers to it.
Well, Alex, thank you again.
Either just have a nice relaxing night or tons of drugs, binge on fast food, and passed out Chris Farley style. We're not sure yet.
Yeah, either one of those are pretty good options.
Well, up in the air. We're going to flip a coin.
Are you flipping it now?
What's heads?
We're going to flip it off after the radio. Okay. You don't want to let them
Well, Alex, thank you. Thank you for taking the time. Let everyone in the van, if you're still with them, let them know that we said thank you and to get home safe. And yeah.
Yeah, they'll say what's up right now.
What is up? Go Mets. I was at the Matt Harvey game last night, by the way.
I think you just...
Did you hear that?
No, we're just shouting belligerently now.
Oh, okay. I said I went to the Matt Harvey game last night, the one hitter that he threw.
Mets! Yeah.
All right, we're getting the signal now. We're big on signals here. So, Alex, we're going to have to let you go.
Hey, nice talking to you guys.
Yeah, of course, man. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Blow out. See you guys.
Later.
Well, that was some young men on tour.
I would love to be on tour, man, like all the time. The older you get, the creepier it probably seems. But
you were on tour like a year and a half ago, right?
I did, yeah. I was tour managing with Talk Normal on their tour with Wire.
What was the best part of that experience?
Well, that was a really weird experience because Wire is old now, and no offense to the dudes in Wire, they were really awesome. But so
you're
their
that
fan,
wire.
So their fan,
Derek thinks you're old.
So their fans are equally as old. So right. It makes it a very like, you know, shows are over at like 10 and kind of like, and it's also in England where shows end, you know, usually earlier because they like to have two bands play and then everything turns into like a club night basically after it. So it was a little bit weird, but I mean, in that instance, it was just Talk Normal are two of my really best friends. There, so like, you know, touring with two friends in Europe and then it's kind of amazing.
Think you'll do it again?
I would love to, but, you know, Sometimes you gotta pay the bills.
World
Chris.
Sucks you in.
That's the biggest issue with bands touring is how do they pay the rent while they're gone?
How do they pay the rent?
I mean,
murder for hire. Murder for hire schemes.
Yes, I think if we've learned anything today, it's that murder for hire might be a
viable career option.
All right. Thank you, As I Lay Dying. Anyway, hopefully that doesn't get cut for licensing issues. This is I would like to thank Ryan for joining us today.
And the So-So Glows, obviously.
And we'll try to check back on a weekly basis. This has been, what are we calling it again? What are we calling it? You don't remember,
well, I don't remember.
This is Nothing Urgent, hosted by Derek Evers from Impose, Chris Robbins from Gothamist. Tune in.
The answer was Nothing Urgent.
Yes, the answer is Nothing Urgent. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.